everyone, and welcome to a special weekday episode of Dallas Hoops Fancast. In this episode, I had on a special guest, Noah from the NBAUnderground.com. He recently did a deep dive into Luka Doncic's scoring ability and how he scores so efficiently. The article was so informative that I wanted to have him on to talk more about it. This is a really interesting episode. We talk about two unique techniques that Luka uses to score, plus some ways that he can improve as a scorer. Noah did a great job of breaking this down. He also had a funny story about how he, as a Clippers fan, ended up with a Luka jersey instead of a Kawhi Leonard jersey. And he had some interesting thoughts on why duos are better than a big three. So here's the interview. I know you guys will enjoy it. Okay, I'm joined now by Noah from the NBAUnderground.com. Noah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited. This is my first time ever being on a podcast. And excited to watch some talk some basketball.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot this was your first one. I'm sure you'll do great. You're on to talk about a pretty in-depth breakdown that you did recently on your site of how Luka Doncic is able to score so easily and efficiently. For everyone listening, I highly recommend you check out this article. It's on the NBAUnderground.com. Very, very interesting. But Noah, I wanted to have you on and just break this down and go over the skills and the techniques that you highlighted in this piece. First of all, just when you were working on this article and watching the film, what stood out to you the most about Luka's scoring or the way that he scores?
So I think the best way to preface this is what actually inspired me to make the article in the first place. So if you don't know, I am a Clipper fan. You know, like last year they were like in the playoffs. It was kind of a participation seeding. But this year, you know, they actually had a chance to win it. And I was like, okay, the Mavericks, it's the first round. Then we have two really good wing defenders. So I'm sure Luka will struggle. It's his first playoff appearance. It'll be fine. It'll be quick. That's how I thought it would be. The series had me completely on edge. I was actually nervous. I was worried if Porzingis wasn't injured, I don't know what would happen. So I was like, okay, I need to find out why Luka cooked like our entire team and why nothing was working. So yeah, that's what got me to start this. And that was obviously the first sample of a film I had. If I have to say his most distinctive trait has to be the way he's able to decelerate on his drives. I think it's very overlooked because, you know, usually we think of someone like when you blow by your defender, you have a very quick first step. You leave the defender in the dust. Mm-hmm. So Luka blows by defenders, but he does it on his last step. He does it at the end, which is kind of different from what most people do. And even though it's not running, it's not like an Olympic athletic trait, I guess you could say, it's still very hard to totally stop your movement, especially when you're the backpedaling defense. And that's probably one of if not his most important athletic tool, which helps him get space. So his deceleration is definitely what stood out the most.
Yeah, I liked, so you brought out that he's usually not looked at as an athletic player and super quick or super fast, but deceleration actually does require a measure of athleticism because you're running maybe not at full speed, but he's driving to the basket, and then being able to stop, that does require athleticism to do it as quickly as he does. And then how does that help him to get these open shots even when going against maybe a big man at the rim?
I think obviously, you know, it's the hardest of scenario to finish in is finishing against a dropping big. But usually a lot of the time the Clippers, because, you know, they have other than Zubac, like most of their players on the roster are able to switch. So he was usually a kind of a wing or a guard was sticking on him through the pick and roll. And he's just able to totally lose them. I thought it's funny because he's going slow, then he goes even slower. And I mean, and then you go and he jumps, his defender jumps, the defender falls backwards. He goes straight up and down. And not just like his stopping, but his timing. probably my second favorite thing about him, his timing, his awareness. His timing is impeccable. He'll release the shot after the defender has fallen down. And I mean, it's probably just a terrible feeling to, like, you know, be falling down, watching the guy you're guarding taking an open shot, truly defeating. But yeah, I guess the one downside to this is that, you know, because he's stopping rather than exploding forward, he's taking his rim attempts a bit farther from the hoop than rather than closer to the hoop, which is probably the next thing that makes him so good, which is that he's an outlier finisher in terms of his touch. It's just, I think, yeah, according to Cleaning the Glass last year, he finished 72% at the rim, which is fantastic. That's like what LeBron, around what, where he finishes, just for reference. And according to B-Ball Index, he took the highest degree of difficulty shots at the rim. So,
oh wow,
no small feat there.
Yeah, I think so. When you were talking about deceleration, there was a quote in there that I thought summed it up perfectly, because a lot of times in a pick and roll, which is what the Mavericks use a lot in their offense, the big will drop back. And the goal of that is to kind of force the player into a pull-up two, because if he keeps driving, since the big is dropping back with him, then it's going to create this really difficult shot at the rim. But this quote, as you said, this is where Luka shines, where one would think that a slow earthbound player might have trouble attacking the rim in these situations, and then might settle for that pull-up mid-ranger, the two-pointer. But instead, because he decelerates, it's almost like the big is dropping back, and then he kind of just keeps dropping and doesn't even realize that Luka has stopped. And it creates this almost wide open look at the rim. And you see it so many times in games, and it's just like, what? How does he get these open shots? And it's because he can decelerate so quickly that it just leaves the guy falling backwards pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you have to watch it again, because when you're watching it in real time, it just, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
So the other kind of defense is, if they're not going to drop, then his player, his man that's supposed to be guarding him, will just stay with him really heavily. So he won't leave it up to the big man. He'll just stay with him heavily. But in those cases, Luka uses another technique that you brought up, which was sealing, and how he keeps his man basically on his back, and how that helps him to score efficiently, even when his man is still staying with him.
Yeah, so I like to call it a seal. I think some people call it putting your defender in jail. Mm-hmm. Anyways, what it means is he sticks his butt into the back of his defender, and he kind of he holds him off. Usually, like, he does that so to give whoever was screening time to roll, so that if and Luka's strong, he doesn't have big bulging muscles, but he's a pretty thick set. He has weight, and he likes to throw the weight around. So it's not someone that you can just, you know, push over. He's like sturdy. He stands, is able to keep his ground, which is something I think people need to understand. So when Luka seals, right, and then and, you know, he's pretty strong, so he can keep the guy on his back and give the big man time to roll. Essentially, for a couple of seconds, you have a two on one. The big is stuck defending Luka and has to prevent a lob. And because Luka's has a great floater, which is obviously a threat, big man has to respect that, and he can mask a lob pass with his floater. It's just very hard to defend. And then even if someone tags the roll man, I mean, Luka has an eye on the back of his head, on the side of his head, everywhere. He'll find the open man. So that's like a serious tool. It puts the defense in a bad position. And I really want to emphasize the strength there, because he's seriously strong. Like, when I was going over the Clippers series, he was like sealing off Kawhi and his long arms, making sure to keep the ball away from him. So just kind of that court awareness he has. Like, it's not exactly feel. It's I don't know. It's like a sixth sense. That's what I'll call it. It's sixth sense. He knows where everyone is, like what their timeline is, when they're going to reach each spot. It's really impressive.
So just random question. How hard is it to praise a guy like Luka that whenever your Clippers were like supposed to destroy them and he kind of schooled them at some points. Is this a difficult conversation for you?
No, I mean, it's fine. I'm totally over the series. So actually, a fun story is, you know, I was very excited about the Clippers' new team. And over the summer, I was like, hey, you know what? I've just been very excited about the NBA. I think I'm going to buy a jersey, right? And I was like, you know what? Instead of buying a jersey now, I'm going to wait until the finals, and I'm going to get like a Kawhi Leonard jersey that has the, the finals badge on it. And as you know, that's not exactly how it turned out. So just about a week ago, my Luka jersey just arrived in the mail. This is a true story. The reason, and I'm not a trader, just the Luka jersey was for 40% off on the Mad shop. You guys can go get that now if it's still there. So yeah, thanks Mark for the discount. But so that's a story of how I turned my potential Kawhi jersey into a Luka one. So, but yeah, I've moved on. It's fine. I got to learn about a great player. And I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I appreciate the confidence to be like, you know what, I'm gonna wait until they make the finals, cause duh, you know they're gonna be there, and then I'll buy one. That's some extra confidence right there. I like that. But yeah, going back to the way that he seals his man, you talked about how he uses his strength, because he did have guys like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard or Patrick Beverley guarding him, and this seal, when you watch it. It's crazy because you see the guy get stuck on his back and he's actively trying to get back around in front of him, and Luka just keeps him back there. And then there's another quote in here that talks about, like, this is a common skill, but the reason why Luka in particular is so good with it. You said Luka's ability to create and execute in these scenarios versus a drop is scary good. The drop scheme hopes to force a mid-range jump shot, but Luka's vision and patience consistently find a better look.
Yeah, so I guess one of the final this was a little small thing that I wanted to add. Luka's ankles must be some of the best ankles in the league. Maybe sounds weird, but just watching him, like, for example, in this obviously not this season, but the past season in isolation plays, he scored 1.03 points per play in isolation, which is really impressive for someone who supposedly can't create his own advantages. I mean, everyone's seen like the play he had on Bam like a week ago or so, right? You know, where like he kind of pivoted a couple times on his foot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Without traveling. So that was, I guess, a very obvious example. But I mean, because his ankles are so flexible with his movement, even though he's not fast necessarily, he doesn't have like, you know, the biggest bag of dribble moves, when he's, you know, dribbling around on the perimeter, he can attack almost any angle, right? And the way that he can shift his feet so quickly helps him attack by using angles and not necessarily burst. So I just think that's a very underrated thing. And then also that, you know, helps him like stop on a dime, you know, from a drive
to just
stopping. And I guess the final thing on his finishing, which is he's very good at, if I haven't said this already, his touch is fantastic around the hoop. I mean, he takes some ridiculous shots, like some one-handed floaters that would get you pulled out of the game if you weren't him. But he just has a unquantifiable touch that makes him go in.
Yeah, I think I remember you in the article talking about his floater, and he has a hitched floater that almost – it's hard to defend because it has that extra hitch. It's like an extra half second that the defender isn't expecting. Like, they're just expecting either a layup or a floater. But because it has a hitch in it, it gives him a little extra time where the defender then is now on his way down from trying to block it. And so it opens it up for him. You did bring up a good point, though, about the difference between his hitched floater and just a normal in-rhythm floater, and how improving the in-rhythm floater might help him to be an even more effective scorer.
Yeah, he struggles sometimes adjusting to when the paint is wide open and the big is to maybe say firmly rooted under the hoop, or there's just a mishap and there's a kind of a bit of a empty patch of space in front of him. Mm-hmm. It kind of, I guess, because he's so used to, you know, having the defense right on him, it's almost like there's a malfunction in his brain or something just isn't clicking, and he'll like take one too many dribbles. He'll pick his dribble up like one dribble short. It's just he kind of has a rhythm. Even when he's shooting a floater that's kind of out of rhythm with everyone else, he's in his own rhythm. You see him like take his steps like one, two. He knows what he's doing. He's practiced this. When he has like the open paint, he doesn't look comfortable, and it's produced some weird shots. It's produced air balls. It's produced some bad misses. It's weird because he kind of goes into that, like, I guess, hitch shot, but you're not really avoiding.
It's not even necessary. Yeah, it just like makes the shot harder for himself.
Yeah. So, and I think developing like the open floater,
or
floater to use when they drop back. I, as much as it's like obviously a physical attribute you got to have, I think it's a bit of a mental thing as well. Being able to, he already reads defenses very well, but that's another level he has to read. Like, how close is it big, and is it better to get the contact, let their contest pass and shoot it, or should he just take that patch of space right now and try to shoot into it?
I've been like more paying attention to his floater this year since I read that article and talking about like the hitched versus the not hitched. And I feel like this year he's doing better at hitting just an in-rhythm floater, like not hitching it or forcing the issue, but just the in-rhythm floater. I do feel like I've seen that more this year. So I wonder if the Mavs saw the same thing and that's part of his development.
As in the Mavs saw my article or the
both. I'm sure they totally saw your article.
I was gonna say it's crazy to talk about this because usually when you talk about players' tools, you say, okay, maybe he should add a floater. No, we're talking about he should add floater B or floater C. This is like,
yeah. That is true, well, especially for being only in his third year. And I mentioned his three-point shooting. You talked about that in the article, too, of just, like, fans have talked about his decision-making on shooting. But you brought up something about the shot clock and how just really minor tweaks there can make a big difference in his shooting percentage on three-pointers.
All right, so I just want to give a warning. We are going into his shooting. I think his shooting, I see it talked about a lot. There are a lot of different varying takes on his shooting. So I will give, I guess, my take on it, and which is somewhere in the middle, right? So just for reference, last year he shot like 31.5% on – let me check – It was a lot a game, maybe like 8.8 threes a game, shot 31.1%. So, I mean, if you first look at that number, it looks bad. However, a couple ways to contextualize that number. I think one of my favorite ways to do it is the NBA in 1920 season, the average shot distances for a two-point attempt and a three-point attempt were 6.5 feet from the hoop and 25.6 feet. Mm-hmm. For Luka, his average two-point attempt was 5 feet from the hoop, a whole foot and a half closer than the league average, which is impressive.
Yeah.
And three-pointer, his average three-point shot was 27 feet.
Wow.
And just for reference, that's farther than where Harden takes his threes, and Harden is probably maybe the closest comparison to Luka in terms of role. But and this gets to why people underrate his three-point shooting is his footwork, like the way how he gets into his step backs. He's one of the best at that in the league. Few players are able to generate enough space or generate the amount of space that he does on his step back threes. It's very hard to separate the two. So he's good at getting to the pull-up shot. He's not so good at making it.
That makes sense. I would agree. The eye test, I think, also agrees with you.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of his motion. It looks a bit weird to me. But, hey, I mean, some guys have weird shots and it works. And then on the shooting, I think the final thing is, I think in general, right, how good of a shooter is he actually? So usually you like to look at what does he shoot on open attempts or like catch and shoot attempts, because, you know, that's like when you're just kind of empty gym shooting. And Luka barely ever shoots catch and shoot shots or open shots.
Yep.
He doesn't get any. He doesn't have that luxury. So I came across the shot clock breakdown. First of all, if you look at this, so he takes about one shot per game in the 22 to 18 second range time left on the shot clock, which is
so like an early shot clock.
2 to 6 seconds into the possession.
Yeah.
Which is when you should not be shooting a three. John Collins just got yelled at Trae Young for that a couple days ago. But just, you know, not good offense. And he shoots about 27% on those, which is bad. It's bad. And like that's something right there that you can just totally go and take that out. You can wipe that out. Forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right then, from 18 seconds to 15 seconds left on the shot clock, he shoots like 34% ish, which is, and given how hard his attempts is, I'm fine with that. Then in 15 to 7 seconds left on the shot clock, which is where the biggest chunk of offense happens, he took about 4 of those a game and shot 36%. And I think if you want to, you know, optimistically project Luka as a shooter, that is a number you want to look at. That, in I guess, like the ideal game flow and team context, he was shooting 4 threes at 36%, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's encouraging. And then at the end of shot clocks 0 to 4, he was 4 for 58.
Yeah, and those are like bailout shots, which he gets a lot.
But yeah, some of his load and his role requires him to take some of those horrible shots, which bogs down his efficiency. So not as bad as you think, but not fantastic. He's not Harden, I'll say that, even though I compared him to him. He doesn't have it. Like, Harden's a shooter. He shoots like 40% on catch and shoots. He shoots well at the line. So maybe I'll end this by listing things going for his shooting and against it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for it is he has a fantastic touch on inside shots, which is something you hope would contribute to three-point shots as well, just having that feel touch with the ball. Another positive is he takes incredibly hard shots. He takes them incredibly far out. Like, for example, last year on all threes within 27 feet, he shot 35%, and on all threes, 27 feet or farther out, he shot 25%.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, taking those deep threes, it's a part of the job that mm-hmm. comes along with leading the league in usage and whatnot. But yeah, maybe he's just a run-of-the-mill shooter, but we, I guess, put it under a microscope more than we should, because he takes a bit too many.
Yeah.
But
well, and I liked the point that you brought out about the shot clock. I mean, just that alone, fixing that little area could make a difference. And I like this quote that you said in the article. What I hope to have highlighted is that despite the unflattering numbers on the surface, Luka's shooting is much farther along than it may seem. So it's like there's sometimes when he has to bail out a possession, or maybe he takes a bad three here and there. But if you just look at the normal shots, he's actually a good shooter if he can just clean up the kinds of shots that he takes or when he takes them.
Yeah, so I guess I would say his step back shots are more open than the average player's step back shot, because he creates a lot of space on them. However, he just is not the greatest shooter, so he's not making those deep 27 footers at a rate that would stand out. And the last stat I'll give is last year, on all shots that came between the 18 to 4 second shot clock range, which is when most good offense should be taking place other than transition, he shot 35.3% on 6.6 attempts, which is good for his role.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see him ever surpassing like 36, 37% personally.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I expect. Like, we in a previous episode compared him to LeBron. Like, LeBron early in his career was not a good shooter.
I love that comparison.
Yeah. Or a 3-point shooter. But, in his, I guess, not older days, but I guess in the past 10 years or so, he's really worked on it. And he's become like a 37, 38%. I think he might have had a season of 40%, but he's a better 3-point shooter now. He's never going to be like Harden or Steph, but he can definitely knock it down. And I think if Luka gets there with all of the other tools he has, that I think will be enough.
Yeah, he actually did. So I know this stat by heart. I probably shouldn't. But kind of weird. Yeah, he shot 40% in his 2012-2013 year when he just, you know, went absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably his peak. I like the LeBron comparison a lot. I think in terms of their actual, the way they play, like if you had never heard of basketball and never seen these players and someone just gave you a shot chart and some numbers, you would think LeBron and Luka are very similar because they score in all the same places. I mean, they're both fantastic rim finishers. They're both free throw shooters. And I think at least LeBron now, his 3-point shooting is kind of like better than what you would expect based on his free throw shooting, if like you know what I mean. And I feel like their shots are like a little similar, and you know, because like LeBron kind of his shot is kind of like a catapult, if you see that.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah.
Like with those threes, at least that's what I see. And I see a bit of that in Luka as well. So cut down on threes. And I guess the last weakness I have, big one that stood out, is, as I said, his footwork on these step backs is impeccable. I mean, fantastic footwork, and which goes back to the ankle flexibility as well. He gets open looks. Usually the guys are totally beat because, you know, they're afraid of him going into the paint, afraid of him driving, and they'll do most of the time it'll be a sloppy closeout. People are running with one hand up and one foot clearly in front of the other, and when someone is, you know, they don't have a lot of control, they're running towards you and one foot is clearly in front of the other, that is when you want to attack the front foot. I've seen Luka improve on it a bit this year, but how I would like him to improve his three-point shooting is by shooting less threes, and on some of those step backs, when he forces a defender to close out hard, just attack the guy's front foot and take it to the rim. I think that's the easy fix, because he's creating like some fantastic angles, but then he just shoots it. And
yeah, I'm just imagining Luka's scouting report saying has great ankles. It just sounds so random, but you know, it makes sense.
Yeah, no, yeah, you gotta watch out for that. I think some quick team building notes. My first one was find a 7'3" shot blocking 3-point shooting all star center.
You mean Kristaps?
I think he fits the description.
Yeah. And,
you know, find some guys who can switch. I mean, Josh Green looks good defensively. Full stop there. and then, yeah, I said also just find a secondary ball handler, someone who can be a combo on off, hit a pull up three, play some off ball, play some on ball. It's asking for a lot, but and hopefully not be a defensive liability. Like, even though the timelines didn't match up, I thought True Holiday, they could putting through a time machine, making a bit younger, I would have paid for him.
Yeah, I know a lot of fans wanted Jrue Holiday. Bradley Beal kind of fits that too, but I don't know if he's getting out of Washington at any time.
Beal, I mean, he's going to be gone soon. They're going to eventually have to face reality. But I don't know, Beal's, I don't think they really need that much on offense. Another thing I was going to say is don't freak out about getting a third star. Just get a strong roster. I mean, this year, Lakers won with a duo and what turned out to be a surprisingly good supporting cast. I think duos is all you need. Don't get hung up on like searching for that third star or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's not like it used to be where there was a bunch of big threes. I mean, now it really is just duos all over the league. So yeah, that's a good point.
I like it that way, actually. I feel like when with the big threes, there's always, you know, a third wheel, whether it be Kevin Love or Chris Bosh, even though Bosh was very helpful, or I guess fans used to overlook Draymond Green. Although I think the Warriors' big three is probably one of the more well-rounded ones.
Yeah, especially in terms of fit.
Yeah, but then just duos are just cool because, you know, duos, like, you could connect on a lob or something. They go, like, dap each other up, handshake. You can get an iconic picture of that. Where, like, if you have a big three, you don't really get an iconic picture. Like, would you want them, like, all holding hands in a circle? I mean, there's no...
True. You know what? Yeah. You've convinced me. No more big threes because we can't get good pictures. That is a sound argument.
Yeah, only duos. Like the, I guess, Bulls. I mean, Bulls probably more of a duo. I'm not the Bulls now. Michael Jordan Bulls. You have that, you know, picture of Scottie Pippen holding MJ after the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get some really, really good pictures out of duos. I'm sure there's some LeBron AD classics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so duos all the way.
That's true. I like it. I think that makes perfect sense. Well, good stuff. Thanks, Noah, for joining the show. Again, this article is just a lot of good stuff in it, too. And there's also a lot of clips in here, so you can kind of visualize what we talked about. It's at thenbaunderground.com. Noah, I want to give you a chance to share where you are, where people can follow you, where they can find this article if they want to read it or more about your team breakdowns.
Well, as you said, I run the NBAUnderground.com. I'm the editor, staff writer, the social media intern, all of the above. It's a one-man show. I guess the best place to stay updated with me is to follow me on Twitter, which is at the NBA Underground. That's not like the actual tag name is the NBA UNDGRND. But they didn't have enough characters. But yeah, to Twitter, I guess I'm pretty active on Twitter. I like to talk a lot of basketball there. It's where you'll find out about anything new. The blog, it's we go for quality over quantity. So don't expect stuff often, but when something comes out, I put a lot of time into it, and I really hope that people enjoy it. If you follow me now, you get to be one of the elite group of people who followed me before I hit 200 followers, which, you know, maybe you'll get something in the mail one day for that. Soonish, if you're a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander fan, there's going to be a big, big breakdown coming out on him soon, similar to the Luka one. He's a fun player. I've been watching him a lot. If you're a Mavs fan, which is probably why you're listening to this, I just posted a little 2-minute video on the Mavs. I broke down one of their a play they ran and just talking about their off-ball movement, which is superb. And I love it. It's beautiful to watch. It's like art. Yeah, that's me, the NBA Underground.
Awesome. Well, go check out the site, everyone, thenbaunderground.com. Noah, thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed it. And
thanks,
I'll talk to you later. You're not promised tomorrow in this little shop.